Happy Easter. I feel like some of you are so far back there, so it's so good to worship with you today. I'm Tim Ward. I'm the pastor here at Restoration, and I'm so grateful that you've chosen to come here on Easter Sunday and worship with us. So we have been in this place, in this series for a little while. We do these things called series where we talk about a conversation more and more and more and go deeper and deeper. And we've been in this series where we're looking at some of these things you see up on the curtains up here, and we're trying to decide whether we as individuals believe them, right? The church says all these things and we have all these words, but we're trying to decide, do we believe what's on the curtain there? Do we believe the thing that's mentioned? And what about each thing do we believe? And that seems to be what's going on in the passage that Jackson read this morning from the Bible. It seems to be what's going on when Paul, who's a missionary, a guy who goes out and he's trying to talk to the early church about Jesus, Paul goes to them and says, friends, you're the early church. It seems like you're trying to figure something out. And the thing you're trying to figure out is this idea about being raised from the dead, right? The resurrection of the body. Now, it's interesting. The question that Paul is asking them is, what do you believe? And it seems to be the question that we've been wrestling with in this whole sermon series that we're talking through. What do we actually believe? And in this church, we're never going to tell you what you have to believe. We want you to figure it out as you go along. I'm going to share things with you, but I want to encourage you to participate and take in everything that you can this morning. But the question that he's talking about is the question of Easter. Is there actually a resurrection of the body? And he's talking about resurrection of the human body, which is a longer conversation that we can have another day. But he's trying to get them to the point of, do they actually believe that Jesus was raised from the dead? Do they believe that the tomb is empty, that when Friday came and Jesus died and then Saturday comes and he's in the tomb, that actually on Sunday morning he was raised from the dead? What Paul is trying to suggest to them is that if the resurrection actually happened, then it changes everything. The resurrection changes everything. He's also trying to suggest to them a very important point, I think. He's trying to suggest to them that the worst thing is not the final thing. And I want you to hear that very clearly. The worst thing is not the final thing. And that's a theme I'm going to come back to throughout the message this morning. The worst thing is not the final thing. But the fact that Jesus did not stay in the tomb after he died on Friday, but was resurrected on Sunday morning, Paul says, changes everything. Now, I don't know about you, but I think life can be really hard. Do you agree? I think life can be really, really complicated. I think that when things don't go the way we thought they would or the way that we planned them to go, things can get really challenging. And we can find ourselves getting to a place of hopelessness, a place of despair as we look at the reality of our lives. And sometimes it takes us to a place where we claim something. And our claim is, this is it. This is all there is. Life sucks. Right, that's the claim that we can get to. There's nothing more. This is all there is to life. And I think we can become incredibly hopeless people. Now, one of the places that I see people start to really deal with this, because most of us, by the way, don't actually ever deal with these feelings. We just sit in them and say, this is it. But I find when people are facing their own mortality, right, when they're getting close to death, that they want to talk about these things. Maybe somebody who's got an illness or somebody who's older and they know that their life is coming to an end and they say things like, what did I miss out on? What more could I have done? Is this all there was? And they're dealing with this hopelessness and they're having the actual conversation, usually in their head, and sometimes if they're really, really a developed person, they're going to have it with other people. And they say, I wish I had done more. I wish there was more to this life. And I think we can get caught in that same shortage of hope that other folks are in, even when we're not at the end of our lives and we don't have a conversation about it. There's a woman in the community who took a class at the community center. It was a pottery class. And she was so excited. She had always wanted to go and do pottery in her life, and she was really looking forward to it. And she sat down to do pottery, and there was another woman who was sharing the table with her. And she's like, all right, we're going to be sitting here for the next 8 weeks. I should get to know her. And she said the very first conversation that they had, the woman dropped about 15 negative things. this stinks, this stinks, this is bad, this is no good, this stinks. And she said she left just kind of being like, ugh. Have you ever met somebody in your life like that, where everything is negative? And this was a class that met twice a week, so she went back the next day, and guess who was at her table again? So she sat there, and this went on for all 8 weeks. Now, she really loved the pottery class. She loved doing it, and she learned a lot, but she decided not to sign up for that pottery class again. She did not realize that it wasn't that she didn't want to do the pottery. She didn't realize that it was this negative influence in her life that was infiltrating her. That the negativity and the hopelessness got deeper and deeper and deeper. So she quits the class. About 2 weeks later, there were some friends of hers, and they said, hey, we don't know what's happened, but you're better. You seem happier. You seem like you have more life. And she told me that she did not realize that the toxicity of that relationship took her into a place of deep hopelessness. She didn't even realize that she was there. I think we find ourselves sometimes in the midst of hopelessness, and we don't even realize that we're there. Now, what does hopelessness lead to? Right? Many of us find places in our life and seasons in our life where we're there, but what does it actually lead to? I want to tell you this morning some things that I think hopelessness leads to. I think hopelessness leads to a lack of creativity. I think when we're hopeless, we can't dream as much. We find ourselves in a place where we're like, if I can just get up today, just check the boxes of going through the day, maybe, just maybe, I'll make it to the end of the day. I think about the early disciples, right? The people who had walked with Jesus and who were spending time in relationship with him. And when Friday came and Jesus died on the cross, they instantly became hopeless people and incredibly less creative. I mean, if you know the stories of Jesus, Jesus is one of the most creative human beings in the world. He does these super cool things, miracles, and these people who had walked with him saw these things over and over again, and all of a sudden Jesus dies on the cross and all of their creativity is gone. There's no way that he could actually be raised from the dead like he said. There's no way in their minds. They can't fathom the creativity that Jesus has already had, how it could do something else. They can't fathom a resurrection of the body. So what they think is, that's it. That's the story. Hopelessness leads to a lack of creativity. Here's the second thing I think hopelessness leads to. Hopelessness leads to fear. Have you found yourself in fear in your life before? I can't do that. There's no way. So then fear leads us to a place of complaint and complacency. I just won't do anything. My life is so bad. Everything around me is really hard. None of it's good, so I'm just going to do nothing. I remember when I was working in my first job after college. I worked for a company, and about 6 months in, we were purchased by another company. And after we were purchased by this new company, the new company said, we're going to bring in some new leadership, new vice presidents, one for the East Division and one for the West Division. And I remember, y'all, as soon as the announcement was made, the rumors started happening. Oh, they're going to be awful. Those people are terrible. I've heard that they do X. Y'all, we didn't even know who they were, right? We were hearing story after story about how terrible it was going to be. People came to my cubicle and said, I'm going to quit. I'm going to quit because they didn't raise somebody up from within. I'm going to do that. It was so much fear of the unknown that it led to complaint and then complacency. People stopped doing their jobs. They stopped working. And I think when we find ourselves in a place of hopelessness, that's what happens. The early disciples, the early church were there. The early disciples were there because they thought that what happened on the cross that night ended the whole story. The power of the world was just too much. That Jesus' message of grace and mercy and love was over. And then it happened. Sunday came. Sunday morning came and everything changed. It was the resurrection. From the darkest moment in their lives, they moved to one of the most exciting things that could ever happen, the resurrection of Jesus. The resurrection changed everything. Y'all, my belief is that the resurrection changes everything for us as well. My belief is that the resurrection changes my life. It changes my trajectory. It means more than almost anything else in the world, the resurrection does. There's this word that we use in the church, and we've hijacked this word in a lot of our traditions. The word is salvation. And we've really messed up what I think the meaning of it is. I believe that salvation is about this perfect relationship with God. But what the church has said is that salvation is something that you have to earn, something that you have to be good enough for. You just have to check the boxes and you can get there. But I don't think that's true at all, friends. I think that salvation is a gift from God, is a gift from a gracious God that we don't have to check the box, we don't have to learn, but I also believe that it changes our lives. Salvation transforms us. It's not something that can be earned. There's no behavior, no matter how good we are, that can do it, but instead it's already been done for us. That's the promise of the resurrection. It's also that we've taken this word and we've said salvation is just about the afterlife, right? The whole goal of life is just getting to heaven. Okay, I have not yet run a marathon, right? My longest run is 6 miles, so I'm not quite close, right? Running a marathon to me seems nuts. If you're a marathon runner, congratulations. But if I lived my life thinking the only goal was to get to the someday, I'd probably give up. Salvation is not about the someday. It's not about the marathon. Salvation is about our life right now. Salvation is about Christ walking through life with us. In these moments, friends, it's already been done. The resurrection changes everything. John Wesley, who's the founder of this movement of Methodism, used this fancy word he called justification. And he said, justification is that moment where grace and our realization come together. Where God's grace and our realization comes together, and where God's grace, it's the moment in our life where God's grace helps us understand that we can't do enough to be good enough. And we have to simply allow God's grace to do what it does and transform us. Is that freeing? We can't be good enough. So stop trying. God's grace is enough, and the resurrection makes that possible. And it doesn't end there. I think salvation is like a fine wine, right? It's one of those things that just gets better with time. In your life, it gets better with time because as salvation and God's grace continues to work in our lives, we grow into deeper and more connected with God people. And God's transformation is not because we are despicable. God's transformation is bringing us to be people who we were designed and created to be. Y'all, I got to tell you, I'm pretty tired of the church hijacking beautiful words like salvation. I'm tired of it turning these words into things like, well, if you're not good enough, you don't belong here. The message of the resurrection is God makes you good enough. Christ loves you. Now, I think that hope, this thing that the resurrection gives us, I think that hope is something that we have a choice in. We can choose hope. That woman didn't take the class again. I'm not doing that again because I want to choose an alternate reality for me. A lot of our life, we wake up desiring to be in a grassy field, right? To run and play in a grassy field, unless you have terrible allergies, and then a grassy field is awful. But you wake up and you say, I think today is going to be a grassy field day. I'm going to get out, and I'm going to run, and I'm going to play, and it's going to be sunny and beautiful, but then you wake up, and it's one of these days. It's a muddy field day, right? It's been raining. The ground is nasty, and you realize, here we are again. We're in a day in the mud. In fact, some of you, it may have been raining so long for you that you're in a rainy season. And while we long for days that are grassy and sunny, the world has a lot of mud in it. A lot of days that aren't the way we planned, a lot of days that are dirty. And the question I want us to wrestle with a little bit this morning is, who is in the mud with you? Who is in the mud with you? The mud can be overwhelming, but who is in the mud with you? I saw a video this week I want to show you in a second. And it gave me this illustration that I think Jesus in our lives is like an elephant in the room. an elephant in the room that we may have experienced, we may know that's there, but we don't want to interact with, because maybe, just maybe, the elephant might change us. Maybe, just maybe, the elephant might transform us. So I saw this video, and I want to invite you to watch this video of the elephant in the room of mud.
There we go.
Okay.
I have never in my life seen an adult have more fun in the mud. Her laugh is priceless, right? Her laugh is priceless. Life is full of mud. And we have to figure out who might be in the mud with us. Christ wants to be in the mud with you. If you notice, the illustration is not that Christ transforms the mud into a grassy field, right? The mud is still there, but Christ wants to be in the midst of the mud with you, to be there with you, to encourage you, to bring hope. There is hope in the mud. Did you notice the guy in the background? I don't know if you heard his voice, but he's like, are you okay? Like, do I need to get you out? Sometimes I think the world wants to say, do I need to get you out of that Jesus? And what the woman says is, I'm just fine. I'm just fine here in the mud, because Christ is that elephant in the room. Y'all, you may have a lot of mud in your life. There may be things right now that you're like, this is completely overwhelming. You may be like the early church in that passage in 1 Corinthians that said, is Jesus ever going to come back? Because hope seems too far away. Wherever you are this morning, I want to offer you a word of hope. I don't know what you believe, and I'm not going to try to prescribe what you should believe. But I want to tell you, with all of who I am, I believe that Christ is the elephant in the room that wants to meet you this morning, that wants to engage you, that wants to be in relationship with you. Now, just like the proverbial elephant in the room, we have to choose to engage. Otherwise, we're just hanging our dirty laundry on it, right? Over and over again, and we're covering it up. But if we choose to acknowledge Christ and the work that he's already done, I believe it changes everything. What does it do? It helps us move from complaint to joy, even in the midst of the mud. It helps us move from a lack of creativity to dreaming again. It helps us move from complacency to rolling and moving in our lives. I don't know about you, but I want more joy than complaint in my life. I want more movement than complacency. I want more dreaming than lack of creativity. I want to live, and I think the resurrection of Jesus gives us life. The resurrection of Jesus gives us the opportunity to live. So what do we do with this? We choose hope. We choose to believe potentially in something that seems so incredibly impossible, the resurrection of Jesus, that maybe, just maybe, it changes us. The promise of Easter is that Christ is not dead. Christ is no longer in the tomb. He is alive, and we can be too. Salvation is about nurturing that hope that Christ brings us. It's about giving us that promise and that hope. I want us to see Jesus the way the woman sees the elephant in the video. That's what Paul's trying to say to the people in that passage. He's trying to say, y'all, if you just believe in the resurrection of Christ, it will change you. It will bring you hope in the middle of this despair. Now, y'all, we can choose not to engage Christ. We have that option. Christ doesn't force it. I believe when we choose not to engage that the option is often despair. I really believe that. But if we choose to engage, there's a lot of hope there. I have a friend who I recently found out has terminal cancer. And I called her 2 weeks ago because I wanted to check in on her and see how she was doing. And she was so sweet. We hadn't talked in a while. And she said, Tim, I'm doing just fine. I said, you're doing fine? What does that mean? We hadn't said the big C word yet. I said, what does that mean? You're doing just fine. She said, Tim, I have complete hope in what's next for me. Complete and utter hope. See, what I realized in that very moment, it's actually where a lot of this thought came from. I had seen this video, and she said, she has been rolling in the mud with Jesus for some time now. Her mud has been her cancer. And she's been rolling around in the mud with Jesus. And I said, oh, I'm so grateful to hear that. I said, what do you need? What is something that I can pray for you for? She said, Tim, I still have one problem. She said, my family and the people around me, they don't know that I still have hope. They don't know that I'm in a place where I know that I am well taken care of. They don't know where I am. And she said, you know what my prayer is that all of my family would know about my hope. She said, if they know about it, I can die just fine. And I thought, my friend gets it. She gets it. And she's known, y'all, the truth is, this friend has known about this idea for her whole life. She's experienced this grace over and over again for as long as I've known her. Now, I'll leave you with this. From time to time, I have somebody ask me, they say, hey, Tim, do you really believe all this stuff? They say, you're a relatively smart guy. They say, do you really believe this? And I say, you know what the truth is? I not only believe it, but I'm counting on it. I'm counting on it. I'm counting on the fact that Jesus was actually raised from the dead, because if it's true, everything changes. I'm counting on the fact that Jesus is actually raised from the dead, because if it's true, then the last thing is not the worst thing. And the worst thing is not the last thing. So whatever's going on in my life doesn't get the final word. That's the promise of Easter. That's the hope that I get from it. And I hope that you'll count on it today as well. I don't know where you are, and I don't want to try to prescribe where you are. But if you want to talk more about this hope, if you want to have more conversation about this hope, I'd love to talk to you. Because friends, I believe it is easy for us to sit and look at our world and say everything is hopeless. And in a world that seems hopeless, I want to tell you I believe there's hope.